extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I'm David Goss. Coming up today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios, we have a loaded weekend of MLS action on the field and, of course, off the field. As we enter the silly season, we've got Kalen Carr here, and then we've got a relief pitcher, someone from the deep ranks of the big soccer message boards on every transfer rumor that's ever happened, Mr. Tom Bogart as well. Tom, did that feel like a good intro to you? Did that get you going?
That felt nice. I didn't know where you were going when you said deep on the comment section and the message boards. I thought that this was going to be a mustache joke or something, but you rescued it, and it was nice.
I just like the idea that someone anywhere in the world can tweet, "I'm hearing so-and-so," and then you have to go follow it up and actually check to see if it's real. I love the ability of some guy in Papua New Guinea to just guess an MLS transfer rumor, and it dictates your day.
I get a lot of texts like that, be like, "Hey, is this real?" And then I'm like, sometimes, like, if I'm in a bad mood or, like, overly busy, I'm like, "I'm not a piano bar. I don't know."
Kalen, what was Sky Sports today?
What do you think? It was all about Tommy Scoops with the scoop of the century, man. Unbelievable. Good stuff there. You could imagine it was all Bale. I believe they ended it saying, like, Bale mania, like, good luck with Bale mania in MLS. So there you go.
I am excited about it. We will preview the Open Cup quarterfinals coming up on Wednesday. Orlando hosting Nashville for a chance to host Red Bulls in the semifinal. We already know Sacramento will be hosting KC on the other side of the bracket. A full midweek of games as well, which we cover on MLS Today. So you can listen to those shows if you need previews and reactions to that as we go along the week. We will obviously hit all the big games from the weekend as the Eastern Conference took a huge turn towards the top of the table over the course of the weekend. We obviously had some big results for KC and RSL as well in the Western Conference. But before we get to that, we get to the best thing we saw this weekend. And Kalen, I think I already leaned you into this one, but what was the best thing you saw this weekend around Major League Soccer?
Vancouver with it. No, all the news was around Bale. So, I mean, and LAFC, really. It was it was Chiellini, them re-signing Vela to a DP contract, and then Bale. And the crazy part to me was just the fact that these are TAM deals. I was like, at first I was like, no, this isn't really happening. And then I was like, and then on a TAM deal, like, what's up with that? So maybe Tommy Scoops can give us a little bit of insight into that. But it's just, to me, I was like, it's amazing that they were able to kind of get that business. And I think in maybe unique situations based on where they are in their careers, what their goals are, and then, you know, what LA provides for both of them, I guess. That was the headline. I mean, Mbappe was in the crowd in this match as well too on ESPN. So and then Thorington at halftime came out and said, I think Taylor Twellman asked him if they were going to go out and spend that DP or sign someone in that DP slot, and he said sounded like they're moving on that. So the news might not be over at this point for LAFC, which is pretty incredible to see. So they're sort of pushing all of their chips into the table, it looks like, towards MLS Cup, and already top of the supporter shield. So that was the obvious headline for me.
For me, the seeing it obviously through Tom, and one, I was like, whoa, Tom's about to get a big tweet out there. I'm like, I've been checking the numbers all weekend to see how it does, and I was stoked about that for you. But number two was, I guess to me, it felt different than some of these other signings, because I do just what we saw for Wales over the last year. Like, to me, this is physically still like a top five player on the planet when he's on, which in other times with the Roonies and Drogbas and guys like that, I had said, these guys will be good. They're still talented players. The soccer IQ is off the charts. Quality is still there. This one feels different of like, this could be the guy who led Wales to a Euro semi, the guy who scored a scissor kick in a Champions League final. I don't know if it will be every week, but to me, Tom, when I first saw your message, that was my reaction of like, uh-oh, this guy's about to wreck Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I mean, when he's on it, and again, he literally just led Wales to their first World Cup in more than half a century, and like was the driving force, the singular like attacking threat, and so like everything is built around him. So, you know, people talk about I think he played 7 or 8 games for Real Madrid over the last season. I think he played more games for Wales over that time. So
I think it's 11 for Wales, 5 yeah. La Liga games.
Yeah. And again, that's, you know, that's a rightfully a cause for concern. And like, everybody knows what his injury history is. Like, he's not the most durable player ever, but like, this is a team that, you know, Steve Cherundolo is not going to be like, crap, I'm going to get fired if we don't win today. Sorry, Gareth, you have to play midweek and then on the weekend, 90 minutes each game. So it's a really good situation. I'm real quick on the Tam part of things. So as I'm like kind of getting, like I was really anxious as I'm like really close to like having all the confirmations and all the details necessary to report this and like refreshing Fab Romano's Twitter and everybody else in Europe. Like, please don't let this get out while I'm typing out a tweet. Please don't let this get out when I'm being careful and getting another source or whatever. And like all this, the people I'm talking to, I was like, yeah, like, wow, great. Like trying to like get off the phone. Like this is, and I assume it's a DP spot, right? Like this is the last DP spot. And it was like, oh, you know, your assumption isn't right. I was like, what? I was like almost afraid to type it out. I was like, this can't be right. Like I got multiple people telling me that it's not a DP deal, but I was like, this still can't be right. It makes no sense. Like you, John Thorington talking about it. He's like, they weren't like people joking about how did you fit this under the cap? Wow, that's so crazy. And he's like, the financial side of this wasn't very complicated. We said, this is what we can offer. And if they said, sorry, that won't work for us, that's where the conversation ended. So it was pretty straightforward. So I don't know. I just think it's wild. It's somebody who, I don't know, man, he's still so electric and such a singular force. Like this team has so many like high level match winners. Like it's just insane to me.
You know what I was thinking? I was like, maybe we've reached the point of wealth that like the difference between $6 million and like $1 million is kind of just like all a joke. So you're just like, all right, yeah, like you don't really have the money to pay me anything close to what I've been paid in the past. So in this case, like, yeah, sure, for the first 6 months or whatever it is this season, I can take on this and then I can make some more money maybe off the field. Whereas next year, that price might go up if depending on how things go, but sort of playing nice, I guess, for the standpoint of just saying that, I don't know, this is all not a lot of money compared to what he's been making in the past.
Real quick, guys, before you go, the if that option's picked up, he will be a DP. I don't know what those numbers are. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's like, okay, Tam for right now and then a whole lot of money on the back end, or if it's just going to be a little bit more that pushes him over the max Tam.
And you can understand that, right? That's sort of what we talked about when the rumors came up of like, this came up late on. So LAFC turns and says, we don't have the resources because we didn't plan around this. And Gareth Bale, as his team now has stated through Paul Tenorio's article, what you've written, what John Thorington said, their focus was not that number, right? Their focus was how can he be as good as possible on the first day of the World Cup for Wales? And how does he now move into the next stage of his life? It sounds like living in the US is part of that. It sounds like playing for LAFC is a part of that. It also, in hearing the way they talked about it, and a lot of this came out of John Thorington's mouth, so it makes sense he'd say it this way, but you know, to play for a championship, to play for a first place team, to play with Carlos, there was attractions that they put together that also felt different of like Rooney didn't go to DC because DC was the best team and that was going to win a title. Right. And it just felt a little different of like MLS has entered a stratosphere where the agents are aware of what the teams are and how their players will fit. And it's not just let's drop a DP in that makes no sense. And then Bastian Schweinsteiger is playing center back for 2 years because they already have Dax McCarty on their team. It felt a little different than that, which does actually bring me to one point, which is where do all these guys play? Let's say they're playing in a MLS playoff game tomorrow. And I'm not saying this as a bad thing. I'm just asking, how does this attack line up in your mind?
Well, let me just go back first. And just because I have to say, like, I don't think playing for a first place team
in Major League Soccer. That is the whole reason he came.
Is going to
check the standings every day.
Gareth Bale here.
Not just a first place team. Top of the power rankings, which is what he really checks.
Exactly. But I do think that there is something that Thorington did hit on that talked about trying to ask Bale what he needed to be successful. And I thought that was really interesting. I played with John. He's obviously had a really good career, but just understanding kind of the mental side of the player and understanding how to kind of unlock a little bit of that. And we've seen at times Carlos Vela sort of similarly enigmatic and complicated in some ways as far as his motivation levels or criticism, as far as his ambition at times or what he wanted to do with his career. And I think Bale falls into a similar category. And even when it came down to the golf conversation of saying, you know, Thorington, I think, shot it down pretty well, mm-hmm. saying like, you can, it is possible to both enjoy playing golf and want to win, right? And we've seen Michael Jordan, like it's in a sort of American cultural sporting context. Like we've seen that, that's sort of a moot point here.
Yeah, doesn't Tom Brady play in professional golf?
In fact, like if you don't play golf here, yeah, it's almost athlete, offensive. You're like looked down upon as saying like, are you really competitive? Like you don't carry over that insane competitive drive to the golf to like
Kalen, are you
no I'm
are,
terrible
are you getting golf. Some
but I did get dragged down? Into it from playing in MLS. like we had annual golf outings that I almost broke like a bunch of sponsors clubs for. It was really bad. But I do think just like getting a little bit more from him and making sure that he's successful, whether from the sports science side to all that, but I think it's going to be Los Angeles ultimately that drew him to this. Mm-hmm. And I think enjoying a little bit. And that's where I think the legs are on the back half of the deal to say, if you really enjoy this moment, you want to continue playing, you want to continue living in Los Angeles. It's hard, you know, 6 months, that's a short amount of time to fall in love. You might want to extend that stay and play a couple more years, maybe go towards Wales and the Euros next. So that part's exciting. As far as where he fits on the field, that's a tricky one. And I think a part of this is like, the fact that it was a TAM deal, I bet you that that DP slot being is, that's almost more of a nod to me that that DP spot is going to get filled because they want to really push for it and go for it this year. So I would wonder where they put it, because if you add another piece to the attack, that feels a little bit like top heavy. And so, when I think of what LAFC have struggled with a little bit, I would actually see more of like a defensive midfielder being a spot, like a top end D mid. When we look at teams that win single elimination knockout rounds, we see, you know, I think of like, you know, Ozzie Alonso or, you know, Chara or, you know, even Jose Martinez, we saw yesterday's performance, like those types of guys. And they have Elie playing there right now.
And Kellen Acosta as a second choice if Elie's legs go out or they think that they need more athleticism back there. Like it's, they, I think they already have options there.
They do, but I think Kellen's playing a little bit more advanced.
He is, but you can do both. They have the Blessing is kind of coming off the bench. Like they have four starters ish for those three spots. Like it's, I genuinely don't know where you even start the conversations to focus a TP spot. It's truly wild.
They've brought Chiellini in the back. They've got depth up top. Like they're bringing in Arango off the bench. It's wild.
No, it's a deep team now. What I felt like I heard out of Thorington yesterday, and what makes sense based off their track history of Horta and Brian Rodriguez and Ginella, is this DP spot probably won't, they don't look at it as a factor in winning this year, right? It's a young player to make the money sustainable down the road if they need to re-up Bale and they're on Vela and all that. Plus, this is how they've always worked, which is like, what's the next plan? When we sell Brian Rodriguez, who's next? And he said a couple times, like, we now have veterans and champions who can teach that next generation. We'll look at a younger DP. So it feels like it could be in any of those positions, because the idea is not that they have to fill a gap right
and
now.
And in any of those profiles. And that's the interesting part to me, too, is they've shown now the flexibility to say, I thought before that LAFC wouldn't go for a Chiellini. I thought they wouldn't go for a Bale. Like that didn't seem like that fit within their sort of profile of people they would go after. So now they're showing that you don't just have to necessarily pick, you know, Atlanta United continues to go for these South American young phenoms that are going to come on and then move forward. Like they're showing the flexibility, I think, within that to take what's available to them, and that they don't really care whether it's a big star or a young star. They're going to do a little bit of everything, which I think is pretty new for what we've seen in MLS.
Just one more point on that too. Like just in interviewing and speaking to John Thorington over the years, like they get offered or like interest, players reach out or like agents reach out on behalf of players of like this kind of profile all of the time. So John Thorington always kind of talks about our first question is the motivation. Why is this, like, can our goals align? Like, we understand that Los Angeles is going to be a destination. MLS is something that players talk about wanting to do and like an experience, a new project. But is there motivation, right? Is this Wayne Rooney or is this Steven Gerrard kind of in terms of what their mindset is when they're coming here? So I think that says a lot that they haven't done it until now. And that I think it's just a case-by-case basis. And for the most part, just because of the sheer, I'm sure, number of potential interests or potential guys that are out of contract in Europe that would love to play in Los Angeles and enjoy kind of that at the end of their career, I think it's more about, okay, Giorgio Chiellini is this guy with the mentality that everybody says is built different forever. And Gareth Bale has all of the, you know, the mentality that he has and the idea that the World Cup is kind of right around the corner, that he has to be completely locked in. Same thing with like Jadon Sancho in Chicago that I know we'll talk about later. But like these things are tangible to kind of put on the back end of why this makes sense rather than, hey, this is just a guy that, hey, wants to live in LA just because it's nice.
I said a few weeks ago and I'm still leaning on it. And I obviously the Bale one's unique, but I still think the way the MLS schedule is along with this Winter World Cup, I wouldn't be surprised if we see other signings, not at this magnitude, but of guys who look at it and say, I can play through the summer to earn my spot on a World Cup team or to get fit to earn a starting spot. And that's what Bale did. Obviously, Bale is also, he's going to be in movies and in commercials and he's got advertising, all that stuff in LA. But I'm wondering if there are other pieces like that out there. All of this to say that we have spent 6 months starting every show with what happens to Carlos Vela. And then he finally re-signed and his own team just covers it up with that signing. So that was the other news this weekend. Carlos Vela has re-signed. It sounds like a DP deal through the end of next season. So the end of 2023, an 18-month contract is what it will probably look like on paper. Kaylin, I've asked you about this for 6 months now. Now that it's over, do you feel any differently? And have you even noticed it with the Gareth Bale news going on?
I did notice he looked better in this last match. He looked a little bit more energized, up for it. Really nice ball through to Arango there. And I think sometimes a signing like this or signings like this can re-energize a player and in some ways just putting it behind him because it has come down to the wire. It seemed like it was going to get through and over the line, but it did. That is something that can weigh on you. And when we've seen Carlos Vela at his best, we spoke about it before, it's been the idea that he's happy and enjoying himself. So I am interested to see how Bale's introduction affects his position. Both of them, I think, probably are most naturally suited to playing a little bit on that right flank and coming in as inverted wingers on that left foot. You could see Bale going as a number nine, I think, just with his size and his ability, just getting him as close to goal as possible. But
we've also seen Vela do it on this team as well. Yes. Right?
We also saw like a little bit. Vela tucks in underneath and can play provider of the two. You would think he would be more of a natural fit to tuck a little bit more centrally if he wanted to. Mm-hmm. And then, Rodriguez, I think, is the one piece that can really stretch in behind, which I think will be useful for both of these guys that tend to like to operate a little bit more underneath. So I could see that being a little bit of maybe the situation where Bale goes as the number nine. But, you know, you could also try Bale on and Vela on either side with Arango through the middle. There's a lot of different options you could find, but I think we're going to see a better Carlos Vela energized and some of the attention. This team's been successful without him at his best. Mm-hmm. You add a couple more pieces to it. And I think Carlos might enjoy, I don't know if we'll see that sort of second half tear where he just lights up the league, but at least playing a more influential role like we saw yesterday.
I can't wait for the first free kick on the edge of the box.
And he's about to join Schrott. He's taking it. Got right now.
Izzy, baby. Izzy. I could see Cifuentes be like, I got this, guys. Don't even worry about it. Sifu's got some confidence in his game. This weekend, LAFC 2-0 win over the Red Bulls. No Aaron Long, no Luquinhos in this game. Both of them in health and safety protocols. And obviously, I think you could kind of see the writing on the wall. Red Bulls coming out of a Hudson River Derby midweek quarterfinal Open Cup game to fly across the country and then face off against LAFC at noon local time was probably always going to be a tough one. I thought they played pretty well in general, though. They should have been up 1-0 if Lewis Morgan puts away that free kick. So it was a solid performance from them. But LAFC get the win. They're the first team to 10 wins. They signed a 5-time Champions League winner. They've got Chiellini coming in. So I guess stick to this space, and we'll probably talk about LAFC again at some point over the course of this season. Let's keep rolling on to the best thing I saw this weekend. I am as I lack as much creativity as Kalen, which is if it wasn't Gareth Bale, it was going to be an athletic trainer getting a red card and getting a fight in a game, and Philly fans then high-fiving him because it was their favorite part of the game as well. And Philadelphia Union, a huge win for them. So Paul Rushing, the athletic trainer, sent off. It was Mikel Oure's goal in the 7th minute to open things up for Philly. I thought they were dominant in the first half. They were all over LAFC, NYCFC. There it is. That's going to be the rest of my year. I thought they created chances. They were dangerous. Carranza had chances. Gazdag, Bedoya, they all had opportunities to make it 2-3. And then at halftime, you start to worry, like, is this is what we've seen, right? Philly play well. They don't score. Now they get a draw. And then NYCFC, they're fighting to come back. They're pushing. Who was it that even went down on Philly?
Carranza.
It was Carranza. The trainer comes out, Paul Rushing to help him. Nicolas Acevedo, being as helpful as he can be, figured if I can pick him up, then we can continue playing on, which was, I think, a very altruistic thing for Acevedo to do. Paul Rushing didn't agree, asked him to back off politely, then help tap him away. Then Acevedo comes back. Then he gives him a push, which means Tati has to come running from 10 yards away to give the trainer a push. At that point, everything sort of boils over. A red card shown to the athletic trainer, a yellow card to Tati, which I was a little surprised by. And then we see the trainer having to be escorted away as a player is on a red card and the crowd going wild. Kalen, you've played in a number of soccer games. You ever see a trainer get a red card?
No, definitely not. And I did. This was my unlucky week of being on instant replay, so I had to break down this sort of moment in history in MLS. So that was a true honor to do. Yeah, I mean, look, I think the referee made the right decision in the end. Kind of the only decision to give a red card. You just can't touch a player. I would say, for an athletic trainer to be on the pitch, you know, that is, they're the only staff that's allowed onto the field. And I think that carries sort of like a unique responsibility about, you know, making sure that you're not entering the field as an active player. So, I mean, from my perspective, that's something where if Acevedo's coming in and getting overly involved or touching a player, that's really up for the players on the pitch to legislate. So the trainer should leave it up to, you know, Bedoya or the other guys around the field to say, hey, dude, you got to back up off our player. That's their role. That said, I don't know. It's a Philly moment. Like, I feel like I like Pauly from, I don't know where Pauly's from, but I wouldn't mess with him. If I were in the locker room, I said I would definitely be asking for my ankles taped in a polite manner, because that dude does not look like the type to mess around. And I think Jim Curtin said something after the match. I have the quote here. He says, I'd put our training staff up against anyone. Looks like a bunch of MMA fighters that we have on the sideline. Pauly saw one of our guys get pushed and he reacted. No problem with that. So, I mean, all of that, I think there can be two truths here. And I did kind of also just revel and enjoy the idea that he like took off his latex gloves as he was walking off the pitch and like dap up Sons of Ben in the army. I was like, wow, okay, this is like a very Draymond or like Rodman moment happening here. So I'm just gonna kind of like really drink it in. And I think in the locker room, like the guys, well, I don't know. I saw Gazdag, or I think it was Gazdag. No, it was Kai Wagner. Be like, yo, you got to go, dude.
Really
like, get out of here. But I think also there'll be the sentiment of like, hey, this dude's fired up. Like, he's got our back here as well, too. So I don't know. Those guys are generally like beloved dudes in the locker room. And so I would imagine some of that might be something to play with. They'll definitely study it in film study this week. Like, that's going to be on the film study for sure. Like, they're going to break down that play. So, that'll be a fun moment.
My questions are there automatic red card suspensions for the athletic training staff, for the like coaches, for everybody? Like, is he automatically out for two games awaiting a disco report to see if there's any further discipline? Like, I was looking at like our match center. I was like, are they going to put in the little bottom corner red card P Rushing in the whatever the minute was, or is this just not going to be it's something you see in a box score? So I had a lot of questions. Like, I responded to it kind of seriously at first, because but like it's so funny. It's like you kind of alluded to it, Kalen. it's like a perfect Philly moment. Like, and again, like if Jim Curtin's standing there, like, I got no problem with that, then like that's the only opinion that matters in that locker room and how the players feel. So who cares if I'm critical of it? Who cares if, you know, I wouldn't say that you were overly critical of it. Like, whatever anybody else is saying, those opinions don't matter. If Jim Curtin and the leaders in the locker room are like, hell yeah, you got our back, we'll pay your fine, like, do keep being you, keep doing you, then like, who cares whatever the hell I have to say.
Kalen, you said he doesn't really have a space to touch a player. I thought Tati doesn't have a space to come over and push him. Like, we've seen red cards given for players taking down fans who have run onto the field in violent ways, right? So now he's coming over and pushing a staff member who's on the field. I was a little surprised he got away with a yellow card. I believe it was Armando Villarreal in this game. I think he was so thrown off by everything that was happening that it was like, I don't know that I'm going to affect the game with this by giving a red card, but I wouldn't be surprised if you watch that afterwards and someone in the disciplinary committee thinks that that is worth a red card in a way, as much as it was from the athletic trainer.
I don't know. That might incentivize trainers to mix it up on the pitch. Like,
if you can draw red cards on guys.
You can take out Tati Castellanos by sending your athletic trainer on. That's a trade I think you'd gladly make. Like, get out there and mix it up, dude. Like, I think Tati, you know, when he sees that reaction, I think he's like, oh, okay, so the rules have changed here, which is why that rule.
The rules have changed with Tati.
It hasn't.
He's already there. He starts every game on that line.
It hasn't changed, but that's why the rule, that's why I agree with the red card decision, is that you can start to see how that escalated very quickly when that sort of first movement happens. But I thought a yellow card was the right decision for Tati. He kind of pushes him from behind. He's basically saying, like, you're not allowed to do this, right? So that felt within reason for me.
Yeah, I'm with Kalen here on that. Like, Goss, I know that you're a little bit on the other side, but I'm with Kalen. And just even the rest of how that game ended, so that was like, what, the 78th, 80th minute, whatever it was. So there was that they had to sort through. That took a few minutes. And then there was three VAR instances, whether or not to either award a penalty or a goal or a no goal or maybe a penalty from then on until the 99th minute of the game, the ninth minute of stoppage time. It was a classic MLS After Dark moment that happened kind of.
Well, I would also say, yeah, I agree with that. And that kind of did change the momentum of the game as well. Like, that Philly seemed to take some energy from it. I thought Mo Adu brought it up well in the game as well. Just looking at Philly, and I felt like there was more in this for Philly as well. They seemed to really impose their will on NYCFC. They seemed to be the team that was like, I think NYCFC is still the measuring stick, you know, MLS Cup champions, Eastern Conference champions. They didn't actually get to really square off in the way that they wanted to because of the COVID cases before that Eastern Conference final that they hosted at home. So I think there's still a lot in this. And for, as you mentioned, I think Philly had tied 7 of their last 8. It looked like they were heading towards a very sort of disappointing draw at home again when they had dominated throughout much of the match. They basically shut down Tati for the large course of it. And then the penalty happens. Tinnerholm came in and does what Tinnerholm does. That's super promising for NYCFC. Right decision there for me on the handball call. And but I thought, like, getting that final goal, like, you could see the way they erupted there, and that was huge. I think just for them to get over that now top of the table in the Eastern Conference as well too. But I think for Philly, kind of to, I guess, release some of the draw, the draw sort of juju or whatever it's been on them for a while, like that definitely felt big for and I think that's why this game had this kind of extra energy to it.
I thought, by the way, that was disproving the whole, like, well, how can people celebrate goals if there's VAR, where it's like, that took 5 minutes and then Jose Martinez still jumped on someone like he had won the World Cup after that all came through. You said it, I think, for Philly, the, you know, one, Mikel Oure on the field in a moment like this, gets a goal, should have had more. Big game for him, I thought, and big game for them to sort of play their soccer at a lot of times. You said NYCFC, they're still the standard bearers. They are no longer first in the conference. Now you look at this week, they lose at Red Bulls 3-0 in a quarterfinal game. They lose at Philly on national TV. Are there any worries in your mind, for either of you, about where NYCFC stands now post Ronnie Dyla?
Not really. I mean, it's definitely something to keep monitoring. I think the bigger question is if Tati does indeed leave this summer, what they're going to do, if they're going to either sign a replacement, because I don't like Hebert. I don't know if he'll get the chance to prove his old form, but like that's a starting point that they can't really replace. They have a lot of quality in the roster, obviously, and like people have suggested, maybe Talis Magno can go through the center or a way to get more of those wingers on the field that have been so good. But I think that they would need a more direct replacement for Taddy in terms of a center forward, even if just to make up the numbers so you're not relying on Hebert or somebody playing out of position at number nine the whole time. So I'm less worried about these individual games for NYCFC as I am kind of that looming possibility.
Yeah, I'd share that. They did look tired. They didn't really look up for it for me. Like there was the play in the first half where Gazdag lifts it over the top to try and play somebody through and then actually goes or runs around two people and goes and picks up his own pass, ends up creating a chance there. And it's like, that was a moment where I was like, wait a minute, what's going on with this NYCFC team? But I think even still, when they didn't even really look up for it, they were right in it. They get a penalty to draw. Collins, I think, still looks, he was very good. Sean Johnson came up with a big save when he needed to, is still in very good form. So I'm not worried about NYCFC.
I'm more worried than you guys are, but I think that's fair. I just think you look at the moment of your manager leaving. I still feel like you're looking at two games in a row now against Eastern Conference rivals where it felt like the TFC lost in the playoffs, where mentally NYC took themselves out of big games rather than being forced out of it. And you look at how open Omer Fernandez was to close that game out. Mm-hmm. And now you talk about that play, Kalen, that you mentioned where Colin steps. He thinks Chinot's behind him and Gazdag gets to his own pass on the other side. It made no sense in that moment, but they are still arguably the most talented team in Major League Soccer. And they're able to contend even in those moments.
I think that the vibes would be extremely different if they lost the penalty shootout to Portland in MLS Cup final. And like, these are the thin margins. Like they wouldn't have all of this goodwill that right. I'm extending them and that a lot of people are extending them.
Because they're
and
defending champs.
The only difference is a penalty shootout.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's going to be interesting to watch. Obviously a ton of talent, an exciting team to watch with them. Tom, let's go to you. Best thing you saw this weekend.
So it wasn't exactly fighting between athletic trainers and players on the field. This is more of a, you know, I know the move would usually here go for a kind of a super serious soccer take or maybe laugh about something silly like that. But for me, in a game that probably got lost in the shuffle amid this weekend, Nashville versus DC United, you know, the Nashville players in the locker room came together to support a fan who's well-known in the community who just lost a newborn child this week, I think a day after the child was born, led by Captain Dax McCarty, and as well as I've heard from people in Nashville that his wife was kind of involved in this as well. The club made a custom jersey with Baby Ezra's name on it. They all signed it. They took a picture with it in the locker room after the game. Dax McCarty tweeted it out and, you know, said something to the effect, you know, there's no words that we can say, but hey, we're here for you. We're supporting you. His family, the guy kind of reached out, just, you know, this is so touching, everything that everybody's come around. Like, look, man, there's a lot of difficult things in the world. And there's nothing that will make this, a positive in terms of in this man's life and this family's life. I can't imagine the pain, but I just think it's really, really awesome what Nashville did. The players, like, that's a club in the community. You know what I mean? And these moments are really cool. And, you know, I hope that this didn't get lost in the shuffle over the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's a big moment to always remember that the sport that we all love is about community and bringing people together across this country, across Canada, and across the world. And it was a really nice moment, as you said, and I think it's something we're all looking for at times like this. So it was really good to see Dax McCarty, someone who's done stuff like this over his career, and we're lucky to have him sort of as one of the leaders of Major League Soccer. Let's roll in.
Nice
to the
rest from Dax, too, by the way.
Yeah, he does it on the field too, Kalen, sometimes.
Wait, he plays?
Oh, that's once right. Once in a while.
That's right. He's really, really good.
He turned on the Jets. He turned on the Jets on that one. He looked up and saw the space. I was like, okay, Dax, go for it. And then scores.
His great moment off the field overshadowed how good he was on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. He has a huge game coming up midweek. We're going to preview all of that. Let's start with Orlando, who lost to FC Cincinnati 1-0 to open the weekend on Friday night. FC Cincinnati, their seventh win of the year. That is their club record for an MLS season. And it is June 27th still of this year. Tom, this is awesome for them, right? This is belief in Pat Noonan and Chris Albright and what they're building. And they've done it in different ways, high scoring, low scoring. They have been legitimately good this year, and they are going to contend for a playoff spot.
Yeah, what their core is, what they're doing right now is legitimate. None of this is smoke and mirrors. None of this is consistently, you know, winning games that were 50-50 or maybe getting points when they weren't the better team. Like, this is a legitimate foundation. And look, like, I always joke that life is about, like, managing expectations and relativity. And, like, this is such a good story because I looked at this team, I think a lot of us did too, as they are so far away from being competitive. And the goal was don't be the worst team in the league this year. And that was a genuine thing because that would have been progress. And this was a new kind of front office and a new coaching staff coming in you just needed to move in a positive direction, start forming a core. They're ahead of schedule, and I think that they're going to continue along. I don't think that they're going to sacrifice like long-term flexibility for, oh my God, we're in a playoff race. Like we need to move up assets to like capitalize on this. Like what they're doing is kind of building this foundation, this core, and they signed Obi Nwobodo to a DP deal, I believe, that came through in April. If they were just rushing to try to get the best team on the field as quickly as possible, they would have moved on from Obi in the winter and signed a different target. They waited him out, and he looks really, really good. A foundation that's Lucho Casa, Obi, and Brandon Vasquez, who, again, this isn't just smoke and mirrors. This isn't just a hot streak. This is who he is. That's a really strong starting point. And this summer, it's going to continue to be about adding pieces to that core and getting out of decisions from previous front offices that might not fit what they're building right now. I think that it's a wonderful story. It's among the best stories, I think, in the league in terms of this team has been down bad for 3 years, their entire MLS existence. Like you just read the stat. They just got the club record for MLS wins in the season. It's June. We're not even halfway through the season. It's a really awesome story, and they're really building something real.
Before we move on, Anders wants his producer Anders reminder of the day, which is about Anton Tannerholm, which Kalen brought up, and I didn't connect Anders to it. And he, I think, because being a Scandinavian, he's extremely sensitive about stuff. And being a Swede like Anton Tannerholm, he needs to be connected. So Anders gets that. And here's Anders' question for you, Kalen. What's the ceiling for FC Cincinnati this season?
I'll just say playoffs. I think they can make a little bit of a run in the playoffs. I would say getting there undoubtedly would be a success, but I wouldn't bet against them to win a game and advance. I think they are the type of team that they can play a couple different ways. I mean, they can. I think they like to press and get further up the pitch. And I think in the playoffs, there are some question marks I have as far as like, you know, I don't know, like the defensive, they have gotten into some matches where the defense does get called out. So they, you know, might make some improvements. I think they're rumored to be in for Miazga or potentially in for Miazga at a certain point. So I think we got the right guy on the show for that. but I like their foundation. And then even, you know, how they use Lucho, they brought him off the bench in this one. I think he's going to be, you know, I think he's been a standout for them throughout the season, but even when he came off the bench, like you just see the way he changes the game and his energy and his skills able to get going. They got Brenner goal as well, so that's big. But I'd say a playoff team. I can't see them pushing much further than that, but that's solid, like right?
Yeah, that'd be a huge accomplishment.
Celentano, I think, has been good in net. Another good find from the draft. So they've Ray Gaddis, they pulled out of retirement. Now he's starting week in, week out. Like they've kind of gotten hit right on a lot of these different acquisition categories, which has been important as we've seen teams try and build.
Can I just, hey, St. Louis, if you're out there listening to the show, one, welcome to MLS. Two, Trey Callender's the best goalkeeper in MLS. So. And Salentano's been great for Cincinnati. What I'm saying is there's goalkeepers in North America. Please listen to me when I say that, although they've already signed a DP goalkeeper,
a little late on that
as well. Yeah, I was late on that one. Tom, you mentioned the core, the spine. Kalen brought up Matt Miazga. It seems like he would be a signing like that of like not a one-year thing, a 4 or 5 year, you are the center back along the spine of this team. He makes sense. He's played for Jesse Marsh and Red Bulls, and now you look at Pat Noonan and sort of that pressing style. Is there any connection here?
Yeah, look, the post-Cincy, I believe, reported first that was kind of on the radar. Like, yeah, I could say that the interest is real. Nothing is imminent from the last I was talking to people. I haven't gotten, you know, a ton of information or details here other than like, yeah, like there's truth to this smoke. This is something that makes sense. This would be the reason why this team has hoarded the number one allocation spot. They could have traded out. They could have cashed in for probably 500,000 GAM if they didn't, you know, they've gotten about 100,000, 150,000 a couple of times by going from 2 to 1 and then going back to first. But this is why, like they Matt Miazga is somebody who would make a lot of sense. Like you kind of pointed to the defensive unit, I think lacks kind of high-end talent like this, and they already with Nwaboto. I keep on butchering that name. I'm in my head about it. He was somebody that they were really deliberate about. Yeah, like, we really need defensive additions, and this guy is one of the best in Europe in the Turkish league in terms of defensive actions, if not the best. So, and we know that we need more beyond him. So this, like, Matt Miazga would be a home run signing. I don't know if it would take a DP spot. I have not gotten any clarity on that from, say, people in Cincy or around the league. So this is all speculation, but I would lean the fact that because he's under contract with Chelsea, he's going to require a transfer fee. Plus, I don't think that Matt Miazga is going to come here on a very cheap contract. He's somebody that's been playing for Chelsea, probably has some other options in Europe. He's somebody in the prime of his career or in the U.S. national team pool. Like, adding the contract plus the transfer fee, it's reasonable to assume or postulate that he would require a DP spot, and they have all three filled. Which brings me to Brenner, the club record signing, the young Brazilian forward.
Game-winning goal scorer this
game-winning goal scorer. That price just went up. the fractures between him and the club were evident at the end of preseason or the beginning of the season. Internacional in Brazil put in an offer, and he asked the club to accept. So we can call that a transfer request, whatever it is. He was looking to kind of get out. He wanted to take that opportunity. The club wanted to keep him, and I understand that. Like, looking at this, like, a front line of Lucho Acosta, Brandon Vazquez, and Brenner, I think is really exciting, and I understand why they would want to kind of give that every chance to succeed. But, you know, he scored his first goal here. I still think that that's possibly something that could work out. But what is more valuable to Cincy right now, trying to resurrect this investment in Brenner or another DP spot? And obviously, this is all if an offer comes in for Brenner that's reasonable and realistic. They're not going to give him away. He's still a player with value in the world. They probably won't get their $13 million back, but he's somebody that definitely, I know that he has a lot of clubs in Europe that are looking at him. Obviously, all of the previously reported stuff from Brazil, I think that there could be something there. So again, I don't know exactly if Matt Miazga is going to require a DP spot if they were to get that deal over the line, if they wanted to use that DP spot somewhere else. Brenner is somebody to kind of watch for his future this summer.
It's a lot to look at for FC Cincinnati fans. A lot of excitement, though. Because
did I put enough caveats in there? Enough, maybe.
Absolutely.
Got to be careful here.
And on the Brenner side, just from me thinking about it out loud, it would make sense, even if there is a loss, if the sell-on's right, you know, he can, your value can come later on. It's what we saw for Brendan Aaronson. They didn't take the best offer, and now they're getting the money through the Leeds United deal. If you send him to the right club in Brazil, does he recoup the value where now those clubs sell? 25 to 45 to 80 million euros at times, some of the biggest.
They're also
clubs
in a much better position to sell because of their place on the table and the success that they're in right now, where before it would be sort of an admission of some huge failure, right? And I think at this point, it wouldn't appear that way. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes those appearances matter as far as if people want to make a move or not. But I think in this case, that's why you go out and you sign somebody of that age too, because we've seen even in the past where things haven't worked out for the young players, like, you still maintain that value to be able to get them on.
Soteldo, it feels like that might happen with Brian Rodriguez. We've seen guys like that be moved around. Let's keep rolling through the weekend. And I think this was maybe the best game on the field. Austin FC against FC Dallas, Copa de Tejas. This is everything we wanted it to be last year. It took a year. That's fine. There was quality. There was intensity. It was the biggest crowd ever at Q2 Stadium for an Austin FC game. FC Dallas fans traveled. They brought a really good group. Battle back and forth in the first half. I think you saw two clubs that are pretty committed to their style, the way they want to play. Two coaches with very similar backgrounds. And similar work histories as well, both coming from under Greg Berhalter and the national team over the last few years. And then it exploded in the second half. Dallas goes up 2-0. Austin pegs them back to get it to 2-2 with Giete coming off the bench, helping set up both the goals. And then Danny Hosen as well. Kalen, this is Texas for you. It's not Houston. I'm sorry, because now there's three teams, so you don't always get to start.
Houston won this
combo.
Weekend too.
Houston won this weekend. We'll get to that as well. But this felt like two teams that are ready to contend at the top of the Western Conference to me, even with the dip in form for Dallas. And I thought this was a big moment for Austin to continue to put together performances and not drop up and down like we saw from them last year.
Yeah, I try and stay out of power rankings conversations just in general. But I have said within Texas, I have had to sort of put my sort of order out. And I have said Dallas is the best, with Austin next and then Houston behind them. And the game sort of was shaping up to be that way, where I think for me, Dallas was come out. Obviously, you get the two goals, they go up. But continually, I am pretty impressed by the way that Wolf is able to kind of adjust things, make the right decisions to be able to find their way even to come back into games. And I think we saw that in this one with some of the changes that were made. And then, you know, even Denny Houston coming in and getting late, he hasn't played forever. Nick Lima comes in, gets a nice cross to set that one up. So it was a big performance, and Drewsy is still the difference maker for me on the team, the guy that kind of like really jet fuels what they can do in the attack. I think he's should be up there in some of the MVP conversations this year. I expect him to make the All-Star team at least, but he's been really good.
So let me ask this for both of you. Obviously, Wolf has a way he wants the game to be played. They weren't creating those chances out of their possession style. They bring Jete on. They bring Husson on. They go two up top. They play a little bit more direct, more vertical. I guess one question would be, can Drewsy be as effective if they do play some form of 4-4-2 or whatever it is with two forwards? And do we think Josh Wolf is willing to make that change? Or is the bigger picture that they have to perfect their style to sort of create an identity that wins week in and week out?
I mean, for me, if it's a 4-4-2, it has to be with Drewsy as like the second forward. So that's just like, where do you put him? If not, like, are you going to
put him on the wing?
I mean, I guess, but I don't know. I think that he's playing at an MVP level in the center of the field. I would love him as kind of even more of a second forward than he is kind of in that 10 that he's playing now, whatever you want to call it. But I think that it would just kind of be a slight tweak on what they're doing right now, rather than like, all right, we got two forwards on the field. And Drewsy, like, I don't know. I don't think that makes a ton of sense to like force like Maxi Rudy and Musa Gite or, you know, Danny Husson kind of as two of the forwards. So I think that's not really a starter.
Okay. I think that's fair. I feel content that we discussed that and that I was wrong. It's always a good day, you know? That's why we have to have Tom on.
One more thought on this game. I thought it was fun as hell, particularly that second half. That was a lot of fun. I can understand why Dallas fans and Dallas folk wouldn't have considered blowing a 2-0 lead in the last 20 minutes fun as hell. But for neutrals, like that was, you know, kind of what you wanted from that kind of rivalry game.
It's been a stagger for Dallas over the last few weeks, and they didn't have Hedges last week. He comes back. They still give up two goals in this one. They made the change with Nanu. There was that rotation. There seems to be a little bit of a problem in this team, and I think that was part of the question marks when they peaked as one young talent in the attack. Can they be consistent? Although maybe Frank O'Hara is the biggest issue for them, and then as well. But then you've got the veterans in the back. But can Matt Hedges stay on the field? So it'll be interesting to watch as we roll along the next few weeks. This was, as you said, it felt like a playoff game. This was fun. It was electric. It was exciting. We can only hope we'll see maybe a Copa Tejas playoff game, because that would be really special. Let's keep rolling in to Canada. Toronto FC, 2-1 win over Atlanta United. For starters, Brooks Lennon, you saw him being carried off the field in warmups with an injury. News coming out moments ago that Atlanta United says that it is an MCL sprain. He will be out 6 to 8 weeks. That goes on the back of Andrew Gutman being out for 12 plus weeks, Miles Robinson being out for the season, Ozzie Alonso being out for the season, Brad Guzan being out for the season, and Ronald Hernandez right now has an MCL injury. So if either of you want to play fullback, call Gonzalo Pineda and Carlos Bocanegra. Kalen, maybe center back for you. I know you've got that background there. And tough, already a tough day for Toronto. That gets even tougher as Ralph Parisseau scores the winner for TFC late on at BMO Field. You guys want to go Atlanta here or Toronto? Positive or negative first?
I'm just going to point out quickly for Atlanta that like this team just might be cursed with injuries. Like Brooks Lennon has been one of the very most durable players in the league since he returned from the Liverpool U23s at Real Salt Lake. He has appeared and mostly starts appeared in 69 of 71 of Atlanta's MLS games since they acquired him. And this poor guy picks up a long-term MCL injury in warmups and has to be carried off. Like, it's just so brutal, and I just feel so bad. I think they just might be cursed this year.
They went out. They got a center back on loan. They signed a goalkeeper from Mexico to try and fill in the gaps, but it does feel – they had Aiden McFadden play because he was there because Tyler Wolf was with the U-20s, and they don't have enough of a roster to put together a team for this game. Luis Araujo is a baller, so they had that going for them, and his goal, if you haven't seen it, I think it was the goal of the weekend, go watch it. It he's got the touch, he's got the speed, he's got the creativity, he's got the finish. But on the flip side for Toronto, Kalen, this is a positive moment. Two wins in a week. They are in the Canadian Championship final. Insigne now. We know he's going to be in Toronto. We know he's going to be available very soon. Do you feel good about Toronto FC off the back of this week?
Wait, I do want to go back to that Araujo goal because that was so sick. You named every single part of it except for the little roll, and that was the best part.
Yeah,
that was the best part. Like the idea that he's like just in, and you're like, okay, what's he gonna do? And he just sort of like casually roll toe poke. I was like, okay, damn.
There wasn't enough sauce before that. As if the run past a few defenders wasn't enough.
Yeah, there was a lot of sauce in this one overall. I mean, Osorio's goal as well. I remember I interviewed Darren Bent a couple years ago. He's now, I think, with Vanny and with the Galaxy. But when he was in Toronto and he was describing Osorio, and he said he's got that wiggle to his game. And he had that wiggle on that one where, you know, getting him back in the lineup was huge. But just that kind of comeback, a cut across the grain, and then to smash it to the near post. So, but yeah, for Toronto, it felt like some things are starting to click. You're starting to see some of those pieces coming together in the way that they're able to kind of connect and play and push the ball. And I think when you look towards the back half, and there was all the excitement, which funny just seemed to get buried of Insigne after everything else that happened over the rest of the weekend. But when you see him potentially coming in on that left flank or stepping into that lineup, and you could see that starting to even go a little bit further, I think some real signs of hope for Toronto. So they've been in a good run of form, and like this right timing right now to add a piece like that.
If they can be positive. I was just gonna say, and Tom, we talked about it a little bit in the pre-show. If they can have an idea, half an idea of who they are, and just feel good as Insigne comes in, that might be enough to push to a playoff spot.
Yeah, look, like this was the kind of really the first time that I've watched them this year and be like, oh, I see what this looks like if you just put Insigne in the team. Like they've had a lot of question marks. And again, they had dealt with a lot of injury issues, and this wasn't the deepest team because they had to shovel out a lot of bad contracts, and you know, like they had to make a lot of changes, and they didn't have a ton of flexibility. So when, you know, Iwak Nola missed a couple months and Jonathan Osorio missed a lot of time, like it's really difficult to recover from that. But with them back, and again, huge revelation. It's crazy to think that with two Canadian internationals, this team is better than without the two. But it made a lot of sense in what this looked like for the first time. I'm like, oh yeah, like just put Insigne in, let him cook, see what he can do. Like they're not far away from the playoff race. Like given what they looked like in May, I think that the goal was to just be within touching distance when Lorenzo Insigne gets here. Like, just give him a chance to play meaningful games and see what you can do. Like, for me, I prefer Ayo Akinola through the center, but I think in this team, he makes a ton of sense as a right winger, particularly with the gravitational pull that Insigne is going to have, kind of like Carlos Vela under Bob Bradley in LAFC, that he's going to be playing more like an inside forward playing off the right rather than like more of a traditional winger. Like you can very easily see Insigne kind of getting the ball and clipping crosses to the back post or whatever it is. Like there's just going to be so much more space on the other side for Ayo Akinola. And I think that that's going to work out really well.
I would say the other part of the identity that makes sense is finally, you know, Priso scores the goal. He rolls off to the corner and it's him, Ayo, Kerr, the guys celebrating. They are academy players, and Toronto has committed to it. They've spent money. They have not been able to push players through as consistently maybe as they would like. Now you bring Insigne in, you probably put Jaden Nelson in the right role at this point of his career to be a difference maker off the bench. Schaffelberg as well. I think Priso could be a big part of the midfield if he's able to get time. Pasuelo, we don't know what happens with him. So a lot of question marks still out there on both sides. For Atlanta, the top end attacking talent is there. Can they keep things close defensively will be the question mark as we go through the rest of the season. Let's roll into some quick hitters as we go through the weekend. We stay in Canada. Montreal, 2-1 win against Charlotte at home. Charlotte missing 13 players due to health and safety protocols. So not exactly the best group they could put out there, but I think pretty exciting, Tom, to see Montreal get a win without Georgi Mihailović in the starting lineup.
Yeah, that was, you know, obviously important, and they don't control what happens to Charlotte. So, you know, it could have been more impressive if it was a full team. But again, they showed up and won. I think the only thing that I would point out, though, is that Charlotte probably could have, if not should have, gotten a result if Karol Twardowski finished either one of that double miss from within 6 yards on both of those shots. And I'm personally upset that that didn't go in, just in the sense of it ruined. I had jokes ready to go that maybe Christian Latanzio is Harry Potter and can do magic, unlike Miguel Ramirez. But they didn't get a result. Apparently, he can't do magic either.
That's a setting one, Tom. To lose a good tweet, that's really, really the victim of this whole situation. Charlotte FC fans being secondary to that. Seattle, 3-0 win to open up Saturday against Sporting KC on national TV. Jordan Morris, Roldan, both cruising. But tough news last week that Obed Vargas is going to be out with a back injury for a sizable amount of time. Let's start positive here. Kalen, are you sold that Seattle post-CCL, post sort of the work they put into it, the focus they put into it, that they are now back as one of the, I believe we all picked in preseason MLS Cup favorites?
Did we? Nah. I try to forget my preseason predictions as a general rule. But yeah, I mean, I've never been concerned about Seattle. And the Vargas news is not good because he's been really important for them. But I think they're going to probably go to the well and play some of the younger players, whether it's Atencio or Leyva, or you could see Rowe coming in as more of a veteran playing that position. So they do have some options to recover there. Producer Anders, I think, is in the chat. Oh, he was saying, what did he say? Oh, he was saying earlier that Vargas got hurt because he was carrying the team on his back, which was a really bad joke. Sorry,
Anders. But you brought it back, so it worked.
I wanted to bring it back for him. But yeah, I've never been really concerned about the Sounders. I think, you know, they brought it up in the broadcast of LAFC to say that, like, these moves are being made to take down Seattle. So that should tell you still the way the Sounders are thought of as far as if you're the road to MLS Cup, I think still goes through Seattle.
Speaking of Anders, we got an email from someone named Jake, but I'll read the email and then you'll tell me if Jake's a real person. Said, in regard to USMNT, it's not a secret that we'd like to find a center forward. Hopefully it's Pepe, but that asks a lot of a teenager. Josh Sargent works his butt off, but hasn't panned out. Daryl DK is injured and thus not available. So what about a solid MLS veteran like Will Bruin? Maybe it's because he just scored against my beloved SKC, but Bruin makes great runs, looks to finish in front of goal. Man, Kalen smiling is going to break the camera. With Pulisic Way and Aronson creating chances, you just need someone with confidence. What are your thoughts?
I'd have to say, well done by Anders. First of all, using Jake and trying to throw us off with my beloved SKC.
Yeah, that's what he,
I'm not a Seattle fan. This isn't Anders.
Amazing.
Kalen, you've been on the Will Bruin for national team spot in our group, in our texts. So now expose yourself to the world. You ready to get Bruin into the USMNT depth chart?
No, I do think Will probably should have had more appearances in the past, but timing and, you know, a lot of different things come into that. I was sort of joking. I was saying if it was like 2011 Will Bruin, where he's just bursting on the scene, scoring a bunch of goals and 23 years old then in MLS, then yeah, he would surely be stumped for on extra time. I think coming off the ACL and playing his role on the Sounders, he's been great. And he's a champion already. So I would say probably a bit of a stretch in this case. I'm not going to – anybody scoring a goal against Sporting Kansas City right now, just not to be overly rude. But, I think, you know, Will's good where he's at. I am open to the idea of a veteran striker coming in last minute. I do like the idea of – especially there's a number of domestic players that are leading the Golden Boot race. I'd even be open to a CJ Sapong. Like, I think guys that can come in and play a role, absolutely. But shout out to Will. I want to give him some love.
Why did you answer that so seriously?
Because that's his boy. He can't throw Will under the bus.
I can't say no.
There's nothing. It's not Will's fault or anything. And there's nothing to break to Will.
We need to.
He doesn't start for Seattle, so I don't know that he could start for the U.S. men's national team. I agree with you,
pivoted to
I love that we've gone deeper cut where it's like Will Jordan Morris and Christian Roldan make the World Cup team, and it's like, wait a minute. There's like one of those memes where it's like, that's a fun game, that's next, and then it goes to the next level. It's like, let's go.
I appreciate the email from Jake, and as Kalen said, I don't disagree looking for that veteran who can maybe fill a spot and maybe doesn't have the ceiling. It's probably a guy who starts on their MLS team at a minimum. And it's probably Giassi's artist, if we're being honest, if he scored some goals. We'll get to Colorado in a moment. Let's go to D.C. Nashville. Nashville gets the points on the road, 3-1 win at DC United. We'll talk about them a bit more. As we said, we'll preview that Open Cup game they have coming up. On the DC side, we heard they'll host the All-Star game in 2023. We heard that last week, so big news for them and their fan base. The other big news we're hearing is transfers around them. So, Tom, Edson Flores goes out. We thought Sonny Kittle was the man coming in to replace him. That is next. There are two open DP spots for DC. They did make a TAM signing last week in a Chilean attacker. Mm-hmm. Do you think with the Sonny Kittle deal falling through, they will still use both those spots?
I think that they're going to try to. They were planning on signing a third DP if Sonny Kittle came in, and I don't know what the finances were. Maybe that'd be something that could have been bought down in the future. I say that because Michael Estrada, I don't know where they are in terms of what they want for his long-term future, but his purchase option is $5 million. So if they want to keep him, they have to, whatever they do this window, they have to have a DP spot open next window, you know, unless that they've already had talks with the club about, you know, hey, maybe he's not worth $5 million or whatever they want to frame it as. But I think that they're going to aim to fill both DP spots. I don't know where it's going to go. I know that, you know, there are a bunch of targets. Thomas Henry was rumored, and then I think he's staying in Europe. I think that they're gonna, you know, give it their best shot, take a couple swings here and see what they can come up with over the next, you know, 5 weeks.
I hope it all fits together. That's my only hope for what they're doing, and it's not just who is available at the last minute and who they get through the door. For DC United, Houston 2-0 win over Chicago. Kalen, here is your floor. How great is Houston? How excited were you about this game and everything else about Houston?
Well, you got to remember I played for Chicago too.
Oh, yeah, true.
So, you know.
Kalen on the top of the table.
But let's focus on the positives. Yeah, let's look at Houston.
Day playing both sides.
Yeah. yeah, Darwin Quintero again, just dancing in the box, just wonderful stuff. Houston kind of hovering. Where are we at right now? Are we hovering around playoff position? Are we getting close?
We're just below the line.
Sorry, okay. they're in eighth, I believe, right now.
Correct.
Okay, 21 points. Okay, cool.
I didn't know you were asking as a Houston guy. I thought you were telling us.
Yeah, sorry. That's my role. They've looked good. And I think the question for me is like, how do they integrate Herrera when he comes, and what does that midfield shape look like? Because Karaskia, I think, has been really good. Having him involved is important. Memo is an option. What do you do with Darwin? Does he play in the middle? Does he play a little bit on the wing? I think on the wing might make a little bit more sense just from a defensive standpoint. And then there's also some questions around Fafa because he has not been playing. It seems like he has not been selected or traveling. So there's, I don't know if there's anything behind that. I have no inside information, but still some question marks. But I think to be at this place, this point in the season, you can see some signs there.
Pat Onstad came on our shows when he first got part of the club, and he said that Fafa was a DP level player and a star, and now he doesn't dress when he's healthy. So it feels like something's happening, as you said, Kalen. So Houston leading, winning 2-0 against Chicago, as you said, pushing for the playoffs. Another team pushing for the playoffs is Inter Miami. 2-1 win over Minnesota United. Two goals in a 3-minute span in the 87th and the 89th from Indiana Vasilev. Tom, and this is a team, we've seen this a couple times. They have not quit on games in tough moments under Phil Neville, and whether it all makes sense, whether they have a true identity on the field, they do seem to be a group that is committed and grinds to the end.
Yeah, I think this reflects really positively on Phil Neville. And we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. These things aren't easy, benching these big stars and your most expensive players in a league in which you're structured where you need to get the very most out of those DPs. So the fact that he benched Gonzalo Higuain and they were playing infinitely better, and he hasn't lost the locker room, and Kieran Gibbs isn't playing either. Like, I think that's really, really strong by Phil Neville. And then to give kind of shout out to the front office, like Bryce Duke has been one of the best low value additions of the offseason. He came in for 100,000 GAM. He's been really good when he starts. He gives that midfield a different balance when he can play with Gregory and John Mata. I know Mata was suspended, but that trio works well because Duke is, I think he's in like the 91st percentile in progressive passes per 90 minutes in MLS for his position over the last year. And then Indiana Vasilev, speaking of value air quote additions. He's somebody who's on loan, and he's somebody that they waited out. They wouldn't have wanted him in the winter, but Aston Villa, Steven Gerrard wanted to look at him, keep him at the club. You know, the club kept him for a few months, and they kind of stayed on it and bring him in on loan again. And look, he's making a difference off the bench.
Yeah, big move for them. I will say, Bryce Duke, it's easier to hit line breaking assist passes when no one's within 35 yards of you. As this game closed out, Adrian Heath, congrats on the new contract. He got extended through the end of 2024, chose to go with a back five. Once Gonzalo Higuain came on the field to sort of close things down, they conceded two goals. After that moment, it felt like it was a little bit too early and it was just too much pressure for them to hold. It does sound like Adrian Hounou is going back to France. So the DP center forward spot once again open for Minnesota United, something to follow as they roll along. Let's hit RSL Columbus here. 0-0. RSL continue to be undefeated at home. They are one of only two teams in Major League Soccer that are undefeated at home. I believe Philly is the other one. We've got a great fan question that we've gotten a couple different times of basically, will Ricardo Pepi come on loan to RSL? Because he plays for Augsburg. The Blitzer family obviously owns both RSL and Augsburg, as we see with Sergio Cordova. He's looking for playing time. I appreciate the thought process in this email. I appreciate the different avenues you've gone to send it to us, because I believe you also DM'd me this and tweeted it at us. And I respect all of that enough to read the email and now say no. There's very little chance that Ricardo Pepi plays for RSL. But I want to put on the show because I appreciate that fan input. And Anders wants us to know why with RSL. What is it that has made them good? Do you feel good about this, Kalen? Do you feel strongly in one way about what has spurred RSL to second place in the Western Conference as we sit right now?
Yeah, you got to give it up. I mean, for me, it was for a while. I would say I was like, well, how is this happening? How is this repeatable? And when you think about just from a bird's eye view of them, what they've also had to deal with, you know, they haven't had, they got rid of, their DP, then Krylak, their other DP is out missing. And they've continued to find good form throughout. They brought in Savarino, I think has been good for them, coming back to the club. And they have a lot of different options to do it. They're dangerous on set pieces. And they've been really good at home. So I feel like that's generally a winning formula if you want to make the playoffs and be in the top F. I'm not sure if it's going to hold all the way through. I think there is still some skepticism as far as, you know, can they maintain this level all the way through the season? But we said the same thing last year about Colorado. They seem to continue that on. And I think that would be the sort of question is like, maybe it's more than this. Maybe it's more than just, I think they're look squarely a playoff team right now, but because they've built up a really nice lead, even on some teams beneath them that you think are going to make a charge. But yeah, it's been impressive so far.
Yeah, and then I have a kind of a bigger picture point on Columbus, and I think you should read into both me and Kalen talking about not what happened at the game to tell you about what this game was like in terms of watchability. It's okay. 0-0 draws happen. It's all right. But Cucho Hernandez is obviously on the way. That was big news. I know you guys have talked about it a lot. We've all talked about it, but they need more than just Cucho. I don't know what they need to figure out in terms of it's just getting Lucas El Arayan back, even though he's not an elite kind of chance creator. He's more of like a Hani Mukhtar type at attacking midfield, goal dangerous rather than big time chance creator. But since April 15th, Columbus are last in goals, last in expected goals, and second to last in big chances created. Their center forwards, Miguel Berry and Eric Hurtado, each only have 4 shots on target this whole year. So Cucho, while like they've talked about his ability to create chances for himself and be really dynamic, it's unfair to expect him to kind of do things like that all the time and to make the most of their $10.5 million signing. They really need to figure out something, whether it's, you know, internally or tweaking formation or tweaking the tactics, whatever it is, they need to create more for the center forward.
They're one of the best teams on the ball in the defensive third and the middle third. Unfortunately, all the goals are scored in the attacking third. So as Tom said, it's been a struggle, something to keep an eye on. Portland, a 3-0 win against Colorado. Nia Škoda with the hat trick. Does this pique anyone's interest? Do you believe now in Portland? Did this get you back on board for a team that hasn't really been in the playoffs at all any point so far this season?
See, looking at the calendar, it's time for them to start picking up points and getting better.
Oh, this is what they do. Yeah.
But they, like... they still have like a lot of things like that. I really like the line of three underneath the center forwards. They need to figure out whether it's Niezgoda or Felipe Mora when he's back from injury. But like if Sebastian Blanco,
they need to figure it out, or Niezgoda and Felipe Mora.
Well, they need to figure out which one of them is going to be consistently starting. But yeah, that's you're right there. But that line of three underneath the center forward, I like so much. I think Santi Moreno has added a lot. He's an overqualified air quote third option between those three players. So I don't know. I still think that there's a lot to like with that team. And Giuseppe Reyes, I have him as one of the managers I respect most in the league. So I don't know. I usually kind of bank on them figuring it out.
Let's thank Cascadia here, Kalen, to close out the weekend. Vancouver, 0-0 draw against New England. Maybe not the most electric game, but for Vancouver, they have been the best team in Major League Soccer over the last 10 games that they've played. And for New England, I think you give credit once again. It feels like they nailed it with Petrovic. It feels like he is the perfect replacement for Matt Turner. Matt Turner even said it last week when you were furious that he didn't play in his send-off game. It's like, you got a guy in good form. He's the future. He looks to be the right guy. Why don't we just let him play? So it feels like New England's nailed it on that front in Vancouver. Yeah, maybe not the result you want at home, but they come off a Canadian Championship semifinal. I think fairly reasonable to maybe have a little bit of a drop in energy after a game like that.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I was not furious at all. I didn't care. I think Weeby was on vacation somewhere fuming though for the narratives. He'd hyped the Matt Turner farewell game for a couple weeks and didn't get his opportunity to properly celebrate. But congrats to Matt Turner, by the way. He was announced today. I saw all over the
news. Passed the medical because he sat on the bench.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. No risks.
Number 30, baby.
This was this match was kind of a weird game between New England and Vancouver. I think some tired legs, rotated lineups as well. And Vancouver had a lot of opportunities. Cavallini had some good looks, but wasn't able to convert. He's been in good form up until this point, but kind of, you know, didn't take his chances well in this one. Hard to read too much into this one. I think for New England, it's a solid point, you know, going on the road. They've been in good form, charging up the table so they continue on. And same thing for Vancouver. I feel like for them, there was a little bit more left on the table as far as being able to kind of win that at home against an Eastern Conference team. So I think they'll probably be the more disappointed of the two after this one.
Anders is melting down in the chat. Which I'm not going to mention, but he does have a point, which is Tomas Hasal is back in training. It's going to be a little while with that injury. I feel like the way Cody Cropper has played, it's his spot to lose. And I don't think Hasal was ready to start this year. The Maxime Crépeau move happened a little bit too late. This actually feels like it's going to work out in the end for both his career, Cody Cropper's career, and Vancouver in general. And again, I talked about domestic goalkeepers. If Hasal then does become the guy, everyone should be calling about Cody Cropper. Let's close out with our preview. We've got an awesome midweek of MLS action, but it's headlined by an Open Cup quarterfinal. Orlando hosting Nashville, 7 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. Here are the stakes. The winner of this game will host Red Bulls in the semifinal of the Open Cup. They will also, if they win that game, have first option to host the final. So for Orlando and Nashville, the path is clear. You could host both the semi and the final to win what would be for both these clubs their first trophy. So it's a huge moment. It's huge potential for them. On the other side, we know Sacramento will host KC. They then have no option to host the final. They came up fourth on that order when that draw happened. That kind of makes no sense, but fine. It's whatever. And we do what we do as we roll forward. So dig into this game a little bit for us. Kalen, you assume in Orlando, that Orlando will have the bulk of the ball. A lot of the attacking responsibility will fall on Facundo Torres, will fall on Mauricio Pereira. How is it that this Orlando team, coming off a loss this weekend, can find and create chances against this Nashville defense?
Well, I think Nashville will win this game. And I think they're in better form right now. And I think playing on the road actually suits them in some ways. They've done a good job throughout this early stretch of the season of playing a bunch of road games. They're able to hit you on the counter. Any sort of turnover we saw this weekend, Taxis sort of goes wandering, dribbling around in his own half. And then next thing you know, turnover. Next, you got Honey on the ball, running at you with space, that's dangerous. And I think that that's going to be the sort of MO. That's the book on Nashville, but they also have some other options as well, where they're able to actually vary their attack at times too. So, but I think they will take a little bit more of a safe approach, being a knockout round. I mean, I think that's going to be Nashville's MO. So I don't think this game is going to, playing at home for Orlando, I don't think it's going to be a huge advantage in this case. So I'm going to go ahead and choose Nashville to go. And you didn't ask me for my prediction, but that's it.
Well, I appreciate you, because normally you avoid predictions. So I appreciate you just offering one up.
Not when it comes for Nashville. I picked them to win MLS Cup.
That's true. You're all in. Tom, yeah, which way do you lean on this one?
Yeah, I lean Nashville as well. Like, Gary Smith teams, and like everything that this team is about, everything that this team has built, their strengths, like, they must be insanely annoying to play in a knockout round. Like, this is, they have the match winner in Hani Mukhtar, and they have this defensive solidity and all of the players that they have in the defensive side of the ball. They have this coach that values making it difficult for the other team. Like, Nashville were built for cup competitions. And Gary Smith, they kind of refer to him as an air quote, a cup manager, just because of all these strengths. Yeah. I do hope that there's a good crowd in Orlando. That would be super fun. I understand why it might not be, just because on the Wednesday, traditionally these Open Cup games for MLS teams midweek don't have that kind of atmosphere. I hope that I'm wrong, and it'd be really cool because Orlando does show out. But yeah, this is, look, it's a big occasion. We need to be, it's a trophy. Like, sometimes we skip across and go, oh, if you win this, you can get in the CCL. Like, no, the first starting point is you win this, you get a trophy. Then it's a bonus that you get in the CCL. So I don't know. Orlando could be hosting the final. Like you said, you already laid out all those scenarios, or Nashville if they went on the road here. Like, winning a trophy in front of your fans is so awesome, and neither of these teams won a trophy yet. So, like, I'd imagine that this is going to feel like the big occasion that it is, in terms of, you know, the team selections and the intensity.
I've said this before. Now that you know the route, Nashville could host the final in year one of Geodis Park. That's it. At that point, it's a successful year. They've won. They've put their name out there the way they should. You fill that building for a final. You get yourself across all of local media talking about it. You win a trophy. You celebrate that trophy. Like, that plants the flag, and that alone is a victory. And that would be.
Wait, are you not giving up? Are you not giving any credit to Sac Republic or SKC? Are you saying?
I'm saying if they do host it, that's in September, which means now you move into the playoffs, and there's no pressure on. For a team like that. And so I think Nashville year one in Geodis Park, that would be massive. I think for Orlando as well, it is a little bit of a rebuild. They're in a weird spot right now. This would be a massive moment for them. In the end, Red Bulls will probably win the whole thing and finally win their first cup.
Open Cup champion, first year at Chicago, Bridgeview, Toyota Park. There you go.
And look what it did for that. The legacy.
Changed my life. Changed my life.
So yeah, changed the club's life as well, but maybe in the wrong direction. Sorry, Kaylin. Had to do that at the end. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for sending in your emails. We got some really good stuff that we got to sprinkle throughout the show. We do have an email from Taylor from Switzerland that we'll save for the next show, because it's a kind of a brain melter and we need time to pick through it and redisperse players and all those types of things. Thank you to Tom for filling in here today, and Kaylin for always being the center back of my heart, and Carlos de los Cobos is when necessary.
There's the reference. I forgot about that.
You bring it up a fair amount to forget about.
It was preseason.
Forgot. Yeah. That is true. Yeah, he forgot. He erased it.
I tried.
As well. Thank you to Anders for doing his thing, and thank you to all of you for listening. We'll be back on Thursday. I was told Anders to pause. Anders told me not to end yet. Do not end. What are we freezing for? Oh my God. Is this a real thing?
For Gareth Bale. I think it just went official. The Discovery idea. Why did DC United get rid of them? That was an easy couple hundred, $75,000.
Anders couldn't even type fast enough to get this joke in.
This is like when you watch the movie and then you roll through the credits and then there's a deleted scene. This is what happens after that.
I think everybody tuned out, by the way. They heard Goss getting into the rap.
So if anyone is still here, if you're not, text your friends and be like, oh, did you hear the end of the show? Yeah, it actually turns out Samuel Jackson's coming back to extra time, as Kaylin says. But Inter Miami receives 75K for the discovery rights to Gareth Bale. I hope you're happy, Anders.
For discovering
Gareth Bale, which is fair. That's a good player to be the first ones to ever know about him as a soccer player.
DC United had them a couple weeks ago.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. So they get to be, Miami get to be the discoverers.
Listen, DC should have signed him. That would have made this all a lot simpler for everyone involved. And on that note, we are done. Thank you for listening to Extra Time. Have a great day, everyone.